Everyone has a story to tell. What's yours? You're listening to Around the World with Dan Perry. Do you enjoy hearing tales of world adventure? Would you like travel advice from those who know the road well? Maybe you want to embark on a journey of your own, and you just need a bit of motivation to get started. You'll find all of that and more on Around the World with Dan Perry.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome back to the show. Thank you so much for listening. Right now, Katie and I are in Ulaanbaatar in Mongolia. The city is also known as UB to the tourists. My guest today, her name is Sendava Nasanjargal, and I'm sorry if I said that wrong. She goes by Dava, much easier for me to say. She and her husband own the Mongol Ujin tourist camp in the small town of Khatgal in northern Mongolia. She is an awesome person. She has a real passion for the nomadic lifestyle of Mongolia, Mongolian people, and she's structuring her guest house or her tourist camp in a way in which she wants people to come and learn about the lifestyle. And I think foreigners, anyone who comes to Mongolia, this stuff is fascinating, that there's this vast land of people who still move every few months, every month in some cases, with the seasons. They herd animals. It's a simple lifestyle. It's an old lifestyle, but it works really well for them. And it's for the most part, fairly well preserved. You're going to learn a lot about this lifestyle in our talk. She does a really good job of describing her people. And I had a great time talking to her. Dava right now doesn't have a website for her tourist camp, but she is on Facebook and she's on Airbnb and TripAdvisor. I'm going to put up links to all those places on my website. The other way, though, if you want to search for them, is just search for Mongol, M-O-N-G-O-L, Ujin, U-J-I-N, and you'll find her. We're going to have my talk with Dava first. And then after that, I'm going to take about maybe half an hour and just recap you on what Katie and I have been up to since we've gotten to Mongolia. We spent, just a brief preview, we spent several days around Khatgal, and some of that time was on horseback, some of it was hiking, some of it was just relaxing at the guest house. So if you are interested in that, I encourage you to stay tuned for the last half hour or so of this episode. And for now, let's jump into my conversation with Dava. Is that normal here to talk to a monk when you're going to have a child and get a name?
Yeah, still now. Some people does, some people not. Uh-huh. Like, for example, when I born, I had another brother. And then brother just was young and then passed away. So parents are afraid. They don't want to lose me, you know, of course. So they just go to the monk and then ask that name. And then just the brother has passed away. So monk gave that tint to me. It's like long life book of Buddhism.
Uh-huh.
That's why they give that name like that. Maybe that's why I'm living like that long enough.
So knows? Your name means long life, and then what's Dava mean again?
Moon.
Moon. Long life moon. Ah, that's interesting.
Because that was a full moon night.
Oh, when you were born, it was full moon?
Yeah.
Huh. Wow, that's so, it's just really different from American culture and how we come up with names.
Yeah.
It's interesting, names are always changing.
Yeah.
Names that were popular when I was young are no longer popular, not as much. And then some names are just stay popular forever.
Yep. Same here too.
Yeah?
Yeah, we just had a talk a few days ago about the names and things here. Like who born here? For example, at the Lake of School, yeah? In this area, many people have a name Dalet. Dalet means like a sea.
A sea.
Yeah, uh-huh. Like a big water sea, yeah? And then many people have a name Dalet with something. Like if somebody born on Sunday, maybe the name is Niam Dalet. I know maybe over 10 Niam Thalas here.
So Mien means Sunday?
Yeah, or? Niam means like Sunday. And then give the Thale, who born here, they have a Thale a lot. Uh-huh. And who born in Ubi, they have a name Tol a lot. Tol is a river front of Ubi. Uh-huh. And who born in Arhanga, for example, they have name Bolkang a lot because Bolkang is Arhanga mountain name.
Wow.
Yeah, so lots of people have a names kind of meaning they're related where they born.
So it has to do with where they were born and then what does the moon factor into a lot of people's names too, the cycle of the moon? Or only if it's full?
No, it depends. Uh-huh. Like many girls have like, the Mongolian word is Sar for moon. So many girls have a name like, but how can I say it? Actually, it's a kind of lucky people say it when the moon growing up time, people born, they have their names with the moon a lot. Hmm. Like first 15 days of the month, the moon grow up and yep. then the next 15 days moon get late and then get smaller and smaller right. and then dark nights and then again small moon. You know that we have a different calendar, like a
Chinese
calendar.
Oh, okay, lunar calendar.
Our calendar is like follow the moon.
Okay.
Yeah, the first of the month is like beginning of the moon.
New moon.
New moon day is the first
right.
day of the month.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've been following the moon here,
yeah.
and I like that. I like being out of cities where every yep. night I can go up and look at the moon. And
yeah.
Last night I think it was first quarter, so it's still getting bigger.
Yeah, for example, week. Today is like 9th of the moon. 9th?
9th? 9th day?
9th day of the month.
Oh, okay.
This month. Like, this is a chicken month.
Oh, so you go by the Chinese.
Yeah, chicken month, 9th day is today.
Okay. Huh.
So, you see, but in your, the normal calendar is 29th of the month, but yep. it's just 9th of our month.
Okay, so you use both.
Yeah, we use both.
Huh. Yeah, that's really, it harkens back to a different time, I guess. But it's cool to hear that you still use that. What about the year? Do you call this 2017 or what do you call it?
Yeah, of course it's 2017, but this is a year of what?
For the Chinese year?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. You go by that?
Yeah, we go for that too.
It's year of chicken this year?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. And, yeah, I mean, some countries that I've been to, they have different years. Like,
mm-hmm.
Thailand, I think, it's like the year 3000-something. Israel, they have their own year, too, that goes back to Abrahamic times.
Ah.
Yeah. North Korea, they have their Juche year, they call it.
Yeah.
From the year that Kim Il-sung was born. So it's like year... I think it's like 105 this year or something like that.
We used to have like that years, like every year the king changed and then for that king's the 7th year or that king's 15th okay. year, like that years before we used to had like long time ago.
Uh-huh.
But not now. We just have the same years, but we know which year is what, like monkey year, chicken year, horse year, like that we use.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's cool. It's interesting to learn this stuff when you travel, like what you, the things you take for granted at home, like, well, it's 2017. It's not 2017 everywhere. That's just a number that we just started from an arbitrary point when Jesus was born.
Yeah.
We think he was born.
Yeah.
And it's kind of debatable exactly what year that was anyway. So it's just something we came up with. But the moon, when you look at lunar calendars, that's actually based on the moon. I mean, that's going to be the same all over the world.
But the year, I don't know that much. The year is fine. We just know it's like our culture or custom, or we don't realize it very well now, but we follow that years and calendar. That it's okay. But the moon, it seems like something reasonable.
Yeah, it's a good way to do it.
Yeah, and you can recognize the dates, weather, and see the moon, how it looks, and what the next day, how it's going to be. You know, it's like a natural weather news you can realize from the moon. And then people also believe, like, human get more stronger first 15 days of the month when the moon were growing up.
Uh-huh.
And then people lose more energy after the last 15 days of the month, like this, people believe.
Oh, they still believe that?
Yeah, our mental, our body follows the moon a lot. People believe it.
Huh.
So I don't know.
Oh, that's cool. Interesting to hear. And right now we're in Hatkal or
Hatkal.
I've seen it spelled in English with a K and with a
K-H. Not.
K-H.
Together.
It's always, you think, you would say always K-H? Hatkal.
Hatkal.
Oh, okay. You have a little different way of saying it. Hatkal.
Yeah, okay. Hatkal.
And when did you first hear about this place?
When?
Yeah, well, like, were you little?
I came here when I was like 18 years old.
Uh-huh.
It was like a dreaming place for me.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Seems like it was actually November, I think, with some snow, and it was an amazing place. So I just had a wish to live here sometime. But when I used to be a guide for many years.
And when tour I was guide?
Yeah, like a guiding all around Mongolia. But the summertime is so hot to the Gobi. So I usually take a tour to the west and north.
Ah, okay.
It's nice and cooler here. But my husband is originally from this village anyway. So we decided to stay here. So last 6 years, we are almost here all the year.
Hmm. And you're from UB originally?
Yeah.
Or Ulaanbaatar is the full name. But do people in Mongolian, do they also say UB?
No.
Or you only say that?
Say that.
You just say that for tourists?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because maybe it sounds too long, like Ulaanbaatar.
It's not that long. It's just four syllables. But all the tourists seem to say UB.
Yeah.
And then whenever I talk to the locals, they say it. But I'm like, oh, do they say that to each other?
No. We don't.
All right. So you grew up in Ulaanbaatar?
Yes.
Yeah. What was that like?
It was a nice, clean, good organized, nice city.
It was.
I grew up in like exactly the center of Ulaanbaatar, center of the town.
Are we talking about the 80s here, 1980s?
Yeah, 1980s.
Yeah.
And I do remember a lot when our government was changing time. But in 1980s, the city was so clean, good organized. And nice city it used to be. But the Russian people established the UB maximum for 600,000 people, as I heard from my father.
Oh, that it was designed to hold
that many?
Yeah,
designed for 600,000 people for maximum.
Uh-huh.
So now it's like more than double, yeah? Like 1.5 or maybe 2 million people are living there in the wintertime because of so many students all around Mongolia studying there at the universities in UB.
Uh-huh.
So it's too much people now, and yeah. Too many people moved to UB after the revolution time.
And that was the Soviet revolution, you mean?
Yeah,
the
like
breakup
1990,
of the Soviet
yeah,
Union?
Yeah, okay. The break time. Like it was 1990. 1990,
okay.
Yeah.
And can you explain this to me again? So Mongolia was part of the Soviet Union, or?
We wasn't like Soviet Union. We was just like a communist country. Like Lenin was very famous.
Uh-huh.
Stalin and have the same rules as like other countries. Like in Lithuania, Yugoslavia, Kazakhstan, Mongolia and Belarus and all have same things, you know, when the time everybody followed Russia. Yeah.
That was before 1990.
Yeah, before 1990. For example, in the countryside, the nomadic people, nobody had... How can I explain in English well? Nobody have their own things. It was interesting, like, none of the apartment is owned by you. None of the animals are owned by the people who herds them. Everything is a governmental.
Sure.
Okay.
So
everywhere
it's communist.
It was a communist rule.
Yeah.
So there was not much jealousy or not much. You do your work good, you good.
Oh, did you have quotas then, or did people have quotas?
Yep.
You have to produce this many pints of milk, or
Everybody had that.
Everybody did.
Like in the countryside.
Uh-huh.
The nomad people, like every month, you have a certain point, limit to reach, like this hundred. So these thousands of milk, liters of milk, you have to produce this much wool, you have to prepare this much cashmere, you have to prepare, and everything was like kind of limited. And you paid well from the government, so everybody has like kind of equal life.
Okay.
But after 1990, government just say like, okay, this animal is yours now, and this apartment is supposed to follow you, and these things is follow you like that. But many other organizations are closed, and organizations are also owned by like private organization like that. For example, my father used to work at the Mongolian Complex Import Company.
Okay.
As an economist.
Uh-huh.
And then his organization also, it used to be a governmental organization, and then it's also owned by somebody after that.
But how did they decide who owns it?
Yeah, it's like a kind of tender. How can I say?
So, like, if I was taking care of these animals and then the revolution happens, then someone just says, okay, Dan, those are your animals.
Mm-hmm. Now,
they weren't before, but...
Yeah.
Okay. But was there a lot of fighting then over who gets what?
No fighting and things.
But now it's much more capitalist,
country? Now people understand if you're doing good with what you have, you will have a nice life. Mm-hmm. Many people understand it. So many nomadic people have more than 1,000 animals and they are living happy. But after 1990, many people get in panic and they don't know what to do and how to survive their life better. So they sell the animals and then move to UB. And that's why the gear districts became huge now. That's
so,
why.
So they viewed the big city as their ticket out of poverty, or that's the good life. So they got rid of all of the only stuff they knew how to do, which was herding animals, which actually could have made them good money. Oh, that's sad though, isn't it?
Yeah.
So big, I haven't spent much time in UB, only a couple days, and I was really, really sick, so I barely even walked around. But are there big communities of Gers there? Or what, I should say Ger is...
Ger district, kind
is,
of.
Is, what do we call it in English? The...
Yurt.
TP? Yes, a yurt. Yeah. So there's big districts of yurts or Gers?
Yeah, around UB, like... North side of UB is covered by gear districts like that.
Okay.
Just the town center is some apartments, and in front of UB is apartments. And then around the UB is like lots of gear districts, and then people don't have a good life solution. How can I say? You know, the water system and then the transport system.
Their utilities are not there.
Not very good.
So it's like a slum.
Yeah.
Huh.
So many of them using just a raw... coals, charcoals, you know.
Oh, for heat?
For heating, for all winter. So the UB is completely covered by smoke from the coals, and it makes sick for many people. So it's very famous, bad, polluted city now for winter time.
It's just I wouldn't think of Mongolia as being polluted, but that's too bad.
Just for winter time in UB. Of course, the rest of the country is fresh, nice.
Sure.
Only like the UB between that four mountains.
Uh-huh.
Get polluted because of that. Many of the cars are too old, not very good qualified, and in Gear District, so they make bad pollution together.
Yeah, and one thing I did notice was there was a lot of traffic in UB, like terrible traffic jams.
Yep.
Like, I mean, you said it was only designed for a certain number of
people.
That's
why.
I could totally see it. Just 5 minutes of walking around, I went, oh man, there are a lot more cars than roads here. This is not good. I didn't really see many buses either.
Exactly.
Just a few. No subway.
No subway.
So.
Only on the
road. Not many motorcycles either.
No.
No, it's just these big cars that take up the whole lane.
Huh. But I hope our government working for that. The city, you know.
To improve the infrastructure.
More maybe bicycles or last year. So many people are talking about the subway and things. So
what
happened when they...
They're thinking about making a subway?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. I mean, the center of it's the part that I saw. I didn't really see any gears. I just saw big office buildings. So it looked quite modern, actually. Like, oh, this is a big city with a lot of traffic. but very different from China in that there weren't a lot of people on bikes. And same with... We were just in Russia. And almost no one on bikes there in any city.
We also don't use that much bikes.
Hmm.
But would love to, more healthy.
Well, maybe things will change. I don't know, but the nomad lifestyle is so interesting to me. And probably anybody who comes here from outside. Because we just don't have that in many countries anymore.
Yeah, that's more interesting maybe for us to talk.
Sure, we can talk about that. Well, can you maybe just give a broad view of what the nomad lifestyle is?
You know, our nomad culture is the biggest thing. It's a huge thing if you learn more and more. The basic small things I can explain is like, people think like nomadic peoples are kind of wild, or they don't have any, you know, how can I say, good music or good lifestyle and things. No, of course, it's amazing culture. We've been a nomadic for all these thousands of years. That's why we are still maybe staying between that huge countries, I think.
Between Russia and China.
Yeah, exactly. And then we completely have a different culture, different lifestyle. And the rules, how can I say? We have amazing, good, big country. So nomadic culture is something very important people need to understand. Sometimes I feel sad, like I'm running on this business with the tourists, and many people come to Mongolia and then leave from Mongolia and they don't understand nothing about our culture and things. Maybe it looks like the nomadic families, it looks like poor people for them, and then they just come and visit and gone. Of course, it's not. They are happy what they have, and they are herding animals. And there is lots of almost kind of big education about herding animals as a nomadic way, you know. And we are having I think, healthiest animal in the world.
Yeah, one thing I've noticed, both here and also in parts of Russia that are very close to here, like Lake Baikal area, you see a lot of cows that are grazing and other animals too. And they look so normal to me, like natural. And it's hard for me to explain. But at home, when I see cows, they're really big.
Yeah.
And fat. Yeah. And you can just see that they're being fed a lot.
Yeah.
Like, I think we grow hay for the cows or grains. And I'm not a farmer, so I don't know this very well. But you can just tell that our cows just eat a lot.
Yeah.
And so do the animals here, but it's so different. They're just grazing on the grasses.
Yeah.
And they're not as big, but they look like in good shape. I mean, I've been in other countries where you can see the ribs on the cows and the horses, and they look really skinny. And then, like the United States, they look really fat. And here, they just look like normal.
Because your animals are just made for meat, you know, or milk. But they are for everything. They're just living normal, like this way. Uh-huh. And
what do the people use them for, then?
Milk them. Uh-huh. And when the animal gets a little bit older, we just eat them. And if you need some more extra money, you can sell them.
Okay.
And all both way. Every single cow, we milk them. And when the time comes, we can eat them. There is not certain type of cows for only for meat or only for milk. And then the normal Mongolian, like yaks and cows, yaks are like one time milk and only 500 grams of milk you can have from the yaks.
What, and ever? Or like once a week? Or
no, every day.
Oh, well, once a day. Okay.
Yeah. And then the cows are like 1 liter. For one milking time, you know? But your cows are like 10 liters, 20 liters for one time milking them, like that much milk they produce. Because it's only for milk type of cow. Yeah. But ours is just for everything, but the milks are healthy and qualified, very good quality of milk, you know?
Yeah, I've only had a little bit, but it seems good.
Yeah.
Yeah, now that we're talking about this, I kind of wish I would have looked into it in my own country a little more beforehand, because I honestly, it's hard for me to even explain the other side, because I don't really understand my own country, how we do things. But it just seems a lot different.
Yeah. For example, every nomad family move around 5 to 10 times a year. They move to herding their animals.
Oh, that much?
Yeah. Like winter, for 3 months they don't move. And springtime, when the animals given a birth time, of course, you have to move a little bit warmer place nearby the water and things. And then they move for summer location. And then autumn is the most moving time. They just need to herd them well way and good way with the good grasses places. Make them fat enough for winter, you know. If they are not fat enough, they cannot survive the cold winter. Uh-huh. So made the animals, I mean, like more stronger. Time is autumn time, and then they move like maybe autumn four times, and then go for winter location like that. So every nomad people move a lot, but they have certain rules, like whatever they want, they can move.
Yeah.
But if you stay for this location for autumn or winter, we're never going to use it, that location, for the rest of the year, the other seasons.
Oh, everybody has an understanding, like this, the grass needs to grow back.
Or, exactly.
Oh, I see. Huh.
And then people know each other most of the time, and every family have a different stamps on the animals.
So oh, they you brand
guys,
them.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. So you guys can recognize which animals is whose.
Okay.
So you guys can hear them ask from each other. For example, if you go for looking for your horses, on the way, how many horses you see, doesn't matter. You can recognize whose horse is it. And then you see it, where are they? Because later on, that horse's owner will come to you and ask, have you seen my horses all around? And you can say, oh, I see them. They were around there. So it helps kind of communication.
Sure. And the families, I guess, have to work together at least
somewhere, kind
right?
of, yeah.
I mean, it's just, it seems like that kind of culture where you have to have cooperation if anyone's going to survive.
Celebrate
this thing.
The things together, help for each other.
Sure. How do they decide whose property, who gets what property or what land?
Who? Like, of course, for example, to that trees, if I move there, if nobody stayed there before, it's of course I stay there for this summer. People around me, they know, oh, it's Davos summer location. People know it.
Uh-huh.
So they're not going to use it.
Huh.
Maybe in autumn or spring and winter, you know. Of course, the landscape should be different also. For the depends on the season, because of the wind, because of the snow and things, still different. So if I choose that place first time, then other people, it's mine.
Everybody know just it. Knows this.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's not a big issue with a lot of people fighting over a small part of land.
Nobody fights.
I mean, you've got a huge country. How many people are in Mongolia, do you know?
3 million.
3 million, and maybe half live in Ubi?
Almost,
in the city?
Yeah.
Okay, so you've got this vast territory with 1.5 million people.
All around the country.
And yeah. And a good amount of them are nomadic.
Yeah.
Oh, it's really cool. What about winter? I've been wondering this. Do the animals stay outside in the winter, or what do they do?
Of course, animals stay outside.
I mean, it's only the beginning of, or the end of September here.
Yeah.
And it's already hitting like minus 10 at night, which is like 16 degrees Fahrenheit. I mean, it must get really, really cold here.
The winter, we're going to be like minus 30, minus 40, sometimes minus 50, especially in Hostel.
Wow.
Big game like that. But the animals, you know, as a naturally, everything suits with everything. So, for example, sheep grow lots of hair on the body, wool, to make them hot, you know?
Okay.
Like these kind of things.
Yeah.
And on the yaks, for the goats, Mongolia's famous country with the cashmeres. We have the best cashmere, I think, in the world. Because of Mongolian goats has lots of cashmere grow up them.
They have to because of the cold.
The cold, yeah. And in every spring, people use a special brush to take out all these cashmeres from the goats. And then sell it.
Oh, I didn't even know cashmere was goat fur.
Cashmere only from the goat.
Oh, okay.
The wool from the yaks and sheep and camels, different type of wools.
Yeah. That's right. You have the Gobi Desert here too.
Yeah.
So you have this giant desert area.
Yeah.
Huh. And all these animals just, they're okay with just standing outside in minus 50 temperatures.
They're okay.
As long as they build up enough fat and fur.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's why now when it's autumn, they have to eat like all the time. Got it, okay. And then that's why the nomads have to keep moving.
Huh. Yeah.
It all makes sense now. And does it just take like a day to take down a gear and put it back up? Or how do they take it down one day and then maybe move for a couple days?
No, it takes just one day. Usually people start moving early in the morning.
Okay.
And if you move so far, of course, it takes 1 or 2 days in ancient time, in long ago, we used the yaks and camels and horses for moving.
Uh-huh.
it takes maybe some days. But I think here now, people just do it, like to gear is easy to move. It takes 1 hour to break it up,
break down,
and then 1 hour to build up. So it's easiest thing to move.
Not much time at all, really.
No. Huh. And then it takes just 1 day now to move.
And most people have motorcycles now?
Yeah, motorcycles and small trucks, as we have the blue one, you know.
All right, okay. Yeah, I noticed that I didn't see a lot of people just riding around on horses to round up the cattle. I think I saw one guy doing that, but most I've seen on motorcycles.
Because you are inside a village now. People are nearby the village. They have gas and petrol station and things. That's why they use the motorcycles and things a lot. Uh-huh. But if people are living far from the village, far from the gas, of course, it's, you know, they don't, many of them is still not using a motorcycles and things. Like, for example, last week I was in nearby the Tetan people, yeah?
The what people?
The Tetan people, uh-huh. The who with the teepees and the reindeers.
Okay.
And around that area, I've seen everybody go for the animals with horses. It looks nice.
So they don't have any motorcycles
or
anything?
Yeah, because if people are living away from the village, they don't have gas. They don't. It's hard to have a petrol and gas and things every single time, you know?
Sure.
So still you're using your horses.
And I mean, even here, it's like, what, maybe 18 hours by bus from UB?
UB.
So it's pretty far. It's a little town. It feels remote here.
Yeah.
And how much further are the reindeer herders?
From here, it's like 350 kilometers.
So pretty far again.
Yeah.
And not good roads to get there either.
Yeah, no road actually, yeah.
No
kind
road.
Of just land.
Oh, that's right. Do you have to ride horses to get in to see them?
Yeah, you have to ride a horse because it's impossible to get there with any techniques. Cars, motorcycles, it's impossible.
Yeah, and so these guys are living like they would have lived 1,000 years ago. I mean, is that right? Or has much changed?
Of course, it's a little bit changed. Actually, the Tetan people are in Mongolia not many years, I think. Or how many years, we don't know exactly very well. They are not originally Mongolian people. It's from kind of people from Tuva.
And where's that?
It's a part of Russia, south side of Russia, next to the border. Uh-huh. And then they're kind of changing also because of the tourism. Now, you know, the phone companies, the mobile phone companies, I put the antenna near with them. So now in the winter location, they have phone, but the summer is too far. They don't have phone. And they also move 4 or 5 times a year. Mm. But still they are same in a teepee because they have no choice for the moving. It's impossible to use any techniques, so they use the reindeers to move. So it's impossible to have a sofas or chairs and tables and things with them, you know. So all very light, small things they use.
Sure.
Almost, I can say, no furniture.
Just gather some rocks to sit on, maybe.
For example, bed. I can explain like how, like 2 sticks from the tree, just cut it and then put it like that. And then some other sticks like that. And then tiny, thin mattress, how can I say?
Yeah, sure.
On it, and then you sleep in there.
Mattress made out of reindeer skin or something? Wow. So it's really primitive. Or maybe that's not the right word, but it's like they're not using anything from the modern world.
Yeah.
Are they making these new beds every time they move?
No, they just leave it there, and then they move. Like these, the teepee sticks, these kind of sticks, they stay there. They only take one cover from that teepee, take it with them to move, and then when they are moving to their summer location, they have their own steel teepee sticks
still
waiting
there from
them.
Last time.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So just cover it by their cloth, one thin cloth, which is rainproof material.
Okay.
That's it.
Okay. And what, 2 or 3 people live in a teepee, or how many?
Yeah, 3, 4.
Huh. And in gears, like, is it 5 usually, or?
The gears are so many different sizes. Yeah. Now we have 4 walls of gears. It's a kind of smaller size of gears, which is good for the tourists only.
Okay.
And then the other gears are like in 5 walls, and then 6 walls, and then 7 walls, and 8 walls. And some of the gears are huge, like this room.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, they can get really big then.
Yeah.
Huh. Because just this world of gears and the
different
Mongolian
size.
People, it's just so different from us. But then you have the Tetan people and they're again more different, like another minority within this culture.
Yeah.
And even more out there.
More.
And so they're not even using gears, they're using teepees.
Yep.
And which look strikingly like American Indian teepees, which we were talking about last night.
Exactly, yeah. Huh. The gears, the nomad people have camels, horses, yaks. They can carry more heavy things. That's why Mongolian people have more furniture, like boxes and tables and beds and things you can carry with you, carpets and things. But reindeers are much more smaller than the horses and other animals, you know? Uh-huh. So reindeers are kind of small, so they cannot carry it like big box.
Can they carry a person? A reindeer?
Of course.
Yeah?
They all ride the reindeers.
Even adults?
Yeah, even just adults.
Jump on their reindeer and fly away?
Ride a reindeer and go for hunting to the mountain.
Oh, wow. What do they hunt?
It's full of animals there. Now it's a national park, so they are not really good for go for hunting that much because national park controls everything. But naturally, they, of course, they not eat every day reindeer meat, you know?
Okay.
They need to hunt as a traditional hunting way. So they go to the mountain, and there is mooses, deers.
Oh, big animals then.
Yeah.
Moose are huge.
Even bears. And.
Oh, bears too.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Deers, musk deers, so many different animals.
What about wolves?
Full of wolves and foxes.
Huh.
And in trees.
So the other thing that seemed really interesting when I first moved here is the people I met, the travelers I met. They were maybe complaining a little that they hadn't eaten vegetables in forever. I'm like, do Mongolian people eat vegetables?
We eat a lot. We have all kinds of vegetables. Even it's just more organic, I could say.
Yeah, it must be organic.
Yeah. For example, the Tipi people, or I'm not talking about nowadays, when we were nomadic people, how they survived the vitamins and things. Onions, blueberries, cranberries, red berries.
Oh, and so they just grow in bushes.
Pine nuts.
Okay, yeah.
Mushrooms.
Uh-huh.
So many things are grow in the mountain.
They can forage for all
this
stuff.
Yeah, different type of herbs, like timian and things. They just collect them all from the mountain, and then they use it for all the year. Now, every morning you are eating my blueberry jam. That blueberry is from the mountain.
Oh, it's delicious.
And then I made the blueberry jam with 80 kilos of blueberries. I made a jam. So this is almost enough until next June. And in June, rhubarb. You know rhubarb?
Yeah.
From the mountain?
Yeah.
We take lots of rhubarb to bring here and make a jam also, and then use it for 2 months. And then in August, next blueberry season comes, you know, and cranberries and things. So we use everything, like all those vegetables, fruit things from the mountain. We have wild potatoes. We have wild onions, kind of garlic stuff, the other herbs, so many things from the mountain.
Oh, it's really cool.
Pine nuts, full of pine nuts in Mongolia.
Uh-huh.
So cheap.
Yeah, I had pine nuts in Russia too.
See?
You could just get a pine cone or find them and take the nuts out, which Katie and I loved doing that because we never even understood where these nuts came from. They just come from pine cones.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, go figure.
Just fresh, you know, you just eat like that.
Yeah.
But nowadays we have all kind of vegetables too. We have lots of pumpkins, carrots, potatoes, cucumbers, tomatoes, whatever. All vegetables are growing up in Mongolia, and our president made a decision, no more vegetables from China.
So
we are producing all our vegetables in Mongolia, and all our flowers growing up in Mongolia too.
Huh.
For example, when I go out the border, I have an allergy with the flowers and breads, like, you know, all around my body.
Gluten-type allergy?
Yeah. Okay. But when I back to Mongolia, I'm fine. I can eat my breads again. Huh. So you can realize on your own body a difference of the flower quality.
So it's really healthy here.
See?
Yeah.
So I'm proud. They are not stupid, especially who's in the teepee. They use lots of things from the nature.
Hmm.
And they raise the milks, you know, from all those animals.
Yeah.
We use lots of dairy product. And summertime nomadic people, they don't have a freezer. So people don't eat that much meat, only some dried meat. And then also it's like a washing a body, like cleaning a body away. Mm-hmm. So we use a horse milk. It's a naturally fermented good drink for your health. Uh-huh. Horse milk is actually helps for your body to clean your liver a lot.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, it's kind of natural medicine, okay? Hmm. So summertime, nomadic people eat lots of dairies. So it's like your body is refreshing with all that milk stuff, not that much meat every day. And in wintertime, of course, the weather gets cold, you need more energy. So people eat some meat, of course. Then it's also, we can keep it outside naturally frozen.
Well, sure, yeah.
Yeah, and horse meat and things, you know.
Wow. I think there's probably a growing interest in this in the West. And I didn't mean to imply that nomadic people are dumb or anything like that. It's really interesting to hear all this. And it just seems like, man, this should just be normal. This all used to be normal.
Yeah.
It used to be you just forage for whatever food you could get. And you just ate, you just had, well, before there was even nomadic people, before people herded animals, they just went out and hunted.
Yeah.
But they've been herding in all over the world for thousands of years.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just seems like this is the normal way to do it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I do the modern world is really attractive to me too. It'd be cool to have a better balance.
Of course, yeah. You know?
I think in the U.S. we're too ingrained in the modern world, and that's why I think there's a growing interest in cultures like Mongolia, and just cultures where they live this older lifestyle.
Yeah, that's a difference between our countries, and the tourist people when they come to Mongolia, if talk more about Mongolian history, about the Great Empire. And the reason of how they make that great war or how to keep our culture like between these countries. Of course, there is more and more and more things will come up.
Yeah.
That's why I would like to make my place as a nomadic culture center here.
Okay.
Would like to share more about the history, more about the culture. And they could see by their eyes how to milk the milks and how to cook it, at least how to make a yogurt by yak milk and things. I would like to show it to the Western people. Your developing countries are amazing too. It's shocking and it's nice for shopping and delicious foods and McDonald's and things are nice. But also, when you guys are living like that way, human, forget about our, how can I say?
Yeah, we forget about our roots or our past.
Yeah, and then how to use your hand to make things more.
Right.
People almost kind of forget about it. Everything is by technique. Everything is by almost cooked things from the supermarket. Just buy it and heat up and eat like this, you know?
Yeah.
So I just see that from many young people. And then they just get interested a lot. That's why I always share one night between my customers, guests, share them one night to the nomadic families.
Uh-huh.
And then they see by their eyes how they are working with animals. Even they can touch for the yaks and things. And
okay, and you want to build this up even more.
Yeah.
How long have you had this place?
5 years now.
Oh yeah?
Yeah.
And did it start out as just a couple of gears or
yeah,
what?
Yeah, only with the 5 gears.
And that's it? No other buildings?
No other buildings. Only 5 gears we started, and then we made a shower house, and then we made a toilet, and then we made a small cabin for us to leave, and then this lodge.
This lodge is really nice. Big place. It kind of reminds me of home too, because a lot of the northern part of my state, a lot of places are like this, like wooden buildings in the forest, and you have a nice cozy fire for the winter. It's nice. I like it a lot.
Thanks.
And so, yeah, this will be really cool. You're going to add on like workshops, and are you going to maybe bring in some of the nomadic people, or do you want to just acquire animals?
I want to bring my herder. Now I have some yaks, actually 13 yaks I have.
Oh, okay.
So I would like to I would like to grow them up more, and then I have my own herder who would look after my animals, and some horses too. So I would like to bring them here, and all this land is mine, so I want to make a kind of shield for the yaks, and another gear for the cooking and things way, and then people can use their own hand. My guests can work with me. And then some volunteers can come and join, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I see there being a lot of interest in this.
Yeah, some activities I would like to make it more like, nowadays also people don't have that much education about tourism. Of course, people come and see our country, but we need more activities.
Sure, yeah.
To do something, to show them, to share them.
Well, you really seem to get it. In ways that, like you're saying, most local people don't. And how did you learn so much about tourism?
Oh, I don't know. That luckily, I learned English maybe when I was young. Uh-huh. That's why. And when I was young, when I was start my guiding in Mongolia, I haven't got many people who speak English. So uh-huh. It was a nice job to make money.
Oh, so you things, learned, you know? You learned in school?
Yeah, when I was at school, I learned Russian, but English too.
Okay.
And then, how can I say? It's the only thing I know in the world. Actually, my major is a teacher, but I've never been a teacher. I just work with the tourists, being as a tour guide, and I would like to improve myself more. I want to see the world out of Mongolia and things. So I went to England and then see the real tourism class. And then make a student trip around Europe, you know, like in Paris, like in Ireland, what is...
Uh-huh. So you traveled all around Europe?
Yeah, kind of.
Cool.
So it was different. And then, of course, okay. Like, wherever I'm working with, most of the time working with Western people. And then now, the last years, our family spent the winter out of border. So, of course, see more about the world, and then what people need to think, what people need to do,
Okay. What
the humans are almost forgetting, and what I would like to show them more, like just thinking and thinking. My brain is crazy. I'm a kind of dreamer, you know, always think and make plans. And
yeah, absolutely. Well, that much is obvious. Where did you go for winter?
Last winter, for example, we were in USA, in your country.
In my country, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, and what was that like?
It's amazing. Actually, we went to the Tennessee to our friends. Uh-huh. They are American family and nice people who Bob Slayman, like Slayman's family. They are nice people. They had the 4 kids and we stay with them. So we have kids also. So it's a nice, you know, and they live in a forest.
Okay.
So every day we can see the deers and animals and cows and farmers and lots of Amish people.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And okay. Who have their own vegetables. Delicious fruits.
Yeah, yeah, there's tiny, a lot of fascination with Amish too,
yeah,
in America.
Tiny, small, beautiful, small shops,
uh-huh,
supermarkets,
right.
Is amazing, you know?
Yeah, their furniture is very famous.
Exactly. And the handmade, so many things,
yeah,
there.
Yeah, yeah.
It was a nice place. And then we made a small trip. Actually, your country is very expensive.
Well, yes, that
travel.
Much I know.
Yeah. Yeah, the flights, but it's hard to take a bus. So take a flight is expensive, but we did, like some of the places, some of the states, like in Chicago, D.C., New York, and Nashville, all around Tennessee. Our friends, family members are around Tennessee, so we visit all around there.
Okay.
It was nice. And yeah. Ohio, we went.
Well, you traveled a lot. The big cities, how did you like them?
It's a nice place for shopping. For a few days, of course, it's nice.
Yeah.
But I would like to see your story and history more.
Uh-huh.
So in Washington, D.C., we spend more time with the museums and the center of Washington, D.C., what is American proud and things, what is written on the wall next to the Lincoln Monument, you know.
Yeah.
And it was interesting. Like the Museum of the Natural History,
uh-huh,
of USA, and
yeah, the Smithsonian is incredible. I've only spent a few days in DC, but I was blown away. I mean, you could spend a month just going through these museums.
Yeah,
and they're all free,
amazing.
Too.
So free, and yeah. It's so shocking. Very good, organized, and full of informations.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
Oh, I was blown away.
Yeah. Most of the places where I go, I always go to the museums.
Yeah, I used to, but I still do a little bit, but it gets old after a while. But Smithsonian is just in a class of its own.
Yeah.
I mean, you walk through, I walked through one of them and it was like, this is the space shuttle or the space capsule that like was gonna launch to the moon, and not a replica that they just built 3 years ago. Though this is the original, you know, things like that. And here's the spacesuit that this guy wore in like 1968.
Yeah.
Whoa, it's absolutely incredible.
Yeah. Mm. But for you, like this kind of our country, yeah, like Mongolia, like half wild country. For you, it's one time to visit and see around. It's interesting for you. For us, it's same too. To go to the Western countries one time to visit and see around, it's fun. But of course, it's not comfortable for us to stay there longer.
Right, right. Well, yeah, I mean, that's why you travel, right? One reason is to just get to know how these other cultures are and maybe see it from their perspective.
Yeah, kind of addicting, you know? Like,
definitely.
You are working with different country people every day. You have very big wish always inside your, okay, next year, where you can go?
Yeah.
Next time, where I can go? Always make a plans.
Uh-huh.
And want to see. And every other countries are beautiful. Every other countries have interesting things.
That's right.
Cultures are amazing.
Absolutely.
In the world.
So you must get tourists from all over the Western world coming here, huh? Yeah. Wow. Do you get a lot of Chinese tourists here?
Yeah, last year. Yeah.
Yeah.
But in not my place that much because I don't speak Chinese.
Oh, okay.
And they come with the guide sometimes.
Right.
But because of our history, China and Mongolia are not very comfortable to each other.
Not very friendly right now?
Not that much.
Oh, okay.
Of course, the politically, we need to be in peaceful way. But, you know, every Mongolian people maybe not really likes Chinese people. I could say that.
Huh. Yeah, there's always little tensions wherever I go, too. You know, it's interesting to hear that. And this is, it's not just here. It's like I've traveled in South America a lot. I remember being in Argentina and people would ask me, well, where are you going next? I'd say, oh, Bolivia. Oh, Bolivia. Oh, those people are horrible. Why would you go there? Like, Bolivia sucks. And it's like, you know, it's their neighbor.
Yeah.
And I don't think they're going to get into a war or anything, but they don't like each other that much. And it's like, but most of them have never actually been there, of course, on both sides. It's just this unknown. I think there's a lot of resentment and a lot of, maybe not hatred, maybe hatred's too strong, but people dislike or are afraid of what they don't know. And if they've never been somewhere, it's easy to convince people that those people suck. You know?
Nobody's fucking horrible in the world. I think it's just, depends. The neighbors usually don't like each other.
That's right. You know? Yeah.
Because always, how can I say?
There's rivalries.
Yeah. For us, it's reasonable. They are like billions of people just in front of us.
Yeah.
And always try to get something from Mongolia. And we are like not the democratic, business smart people here. Like, you know, we want to keep our nomadic culture and be wild. But somebody wants to come and economy and things are so hard now.
Hmm.
So it's kind of reason. Some people, but I think all of us is peaceful. Now we have no fights because of the lands and things. Only some minerals, governmental things, economy problems.
Yeah.
That's it.
Hopefully that stays the same.
Yeah.
I mean, out here in the country, it just seems so peaceful. Hmm. You know, there's always this draw of the internet for me. Like, I always want to check on the news of what's going on around the world. But there's something about just going out and stepping outside of that world for a while. So Katie and I just did that for like 5 days. There's really not much, not many things to worry about when you're out there. You know, it's just, where are we going to put the tent?
Yeah.
And
you're just happy what you have, you know. Of course, you're never going to feel hunger because you have thousands of animals and you have your own gear. You have trees and water and clean and everything. And you have the deals your wife can sell, how many as you need for the kids, for themselves. And then you're never going to feel hunger because you have a nice nature and animals. Hmm. And you have lots of cashmeres and wools and everything, whatever you need, you have. So there is not much stress. They don't dream in about expensive cars, expensive houses, expensive brands and fashions, and we have no idea, you know.
Yeah.
It's one way easy and nice.
It's It's cool. It's.
And I realized also Mongolia, we just last year some crimes happened with the drugs and things, but before it's really, really unusual thing to hear about even, you know. Huh. My nations are nice and pure, I think. That's why I love them.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
You haven't been corrupted, hopefully.
Yeah. But of course it will change. Now all the world is on the globalization way, so
it's happening, but you're resisting. you're one of the few countries I've been to where you're like really resisting. Like there still is this old culture here, very much.
Our nations are proud people, you know. Never had a bad stories. It's like I can't say any other country name anyway. But we are, how can I say, just a kind of proud nation, you know? They think, oh, we are the Mongolians, we are the great warriors, we are the Genghis Khan's kids, yeah?
Yeah.
We're the owner of the half of the world. And then nobody ever know how difficult it is to be hungry, yeah? Hungry? No, right. Nobody never know it.
Right.
Because always we had millions of animals. And that's why maybe people don't understand still that much about the money and things. Actually, almost you don't need money if you're a nomad, yeah?
Sure.
So my nation is just like, anything happens, we are still fine, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, you have everything you need.
Yeah. And we don't have a seaside, so no any tsunami. Never
no
going to happen with us.
Earthquakes? You have earthquakes?
Almost here? Not.
No?
Not that much.
Oh, so not many natural disasters?
Yeah.
Tornadoes? Do you have tornadoes?
No.
No?
Never happened.
Oh. Wow. What about fires? That seems like could be an issue. Like
yeah, last year we had quite long, big fire, like forest fire happened. But it's finished now.
Yeah, because when we went out with horses, our guide was very, very careful with lighting fires, which was good.
Yeah.
I mean, first night he made sure to go down to a dry riverbed where there's no trees around and light a little fire to cook on because he didn't have a stove. Next night he just decided he wasn't going to cook and we loaned him our stove to help cook, but it was just too windy. He wouldn't light a fire. Like, and when he put out the fire one day, he put snow all over it and really, really made sure it was out.
Yeah.
So I figure maybe a lot of stuff has burned down here in the past. I could see that being devastating.
Of course, our country is dry, so every spring we have a quite small or big, doesn't matter, we had some fire. But this area haven't got the fire for many years, I think now. Ugh, shouldn't say that, maybe.
Yeah, hopefully that
continues. Yeah, but we need to be careful because we are so far from everything, you know?
Yeah.
Far from each other, far from everything. And like in your country, for example, if big fire happened, you used lots of helicopters and things and to use. But we don't have that much many stuff.
Right.
To.
Yeah, not much to stop it, huh?
It
we try. I mean, we have our firefighters do a great job. But if it's a big enough fire, there's only so much they can do, too. So we have a lot of natural disasters always.
Yeah.
Yeah, this year it's been hurricanes.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Yeah, so many. And there's always mudslides and forest fires and occasionally there's earthquakes.
Yeah, and so just a few days ago you had a...
Yeah, Puerto Rico got hit.
Yeah, and also the Florida and things.
Florida got hit, Texas got hit. Yeah, but hurricanes... there's some years where they're not really a problem, but this year it's just been a really big problem.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we can, you know, we'll do what we can to continue.
Yeah.
Huh.
It's a world.
It's quite a world. I don't know, but it seems things seem like they're bad a lot. You know, if you read the news again, everything seems like it's just going to shit, but the world's a good place.
Yeah, it's a good place. And you are almost like the end of the world now, from your side, you know, because you are here and we are here, yeah.
Opposite sides of the planet, that's for sure. Yeah. It's like a 13-hour time difference from where I live.
Yeah.
So from Tennessee, where you went, it'd be exactly the opposite side, 12 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in many ways, it feels that way too. But you know, with the internet, it's gotten so easy to travel.
See everything.
Yeah. Can you imagine people who used to go out like 100 years ago? And I mean, when you left, if you're a traveler, you're gone for years and you don't have any contact with home. Like, you have no idea what happened.
Yeah. But now, every day, you can call home.
Yeah, you just call home. Well, you can. Not that I do. Katie's better at that than me. But yeah, travel, I think, has become easier than ever, and everyone should do it.
Yeah.
Well, I think
you are an amazing place in Mongolia.
Yeah, thank you.
This area is kind of most beautiful place of Mongolia, I think.
Oh, and you don't have any prejudice for saying that, do you?
And many of the, of course, the Gobi is beautiful and central Mongolia is beautiful. I always hear so many nice words from my guests for all those years when I used to be a guide. That makes me more proud, you know, like if you're a guide, of course, you are always showing something beautiful to the people. And people said, oh, it's genial, it's amazing, it's magnificent. And you said, yeah, it's mine, kind of feeling you have, you know.
Sure, yeah.
So it makes you proud too. But in this area is more special for me. I love more, like the Lake Hovsgol is 2% of the freshwater stock of the world.
Right.
And it's like the long way from here, 136 kilometers, and then the wide way is 45 kilometers, and then deep, 260 4 meters.
It's a lot of water.
Yeah.
Huge lake.
And it's so fresh, and still we are drinking from that lake every day.
Sure.
And even you.
Even me.
Yeah.
Well, when we were out, we were purifying the water, but I wonder, do people just drink from it without boiling it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
We just drink it straight away.
It looks really clear. It's unbelievable.
So clean.
Yeah, it looks super clean.
Yeah, like take a boat, and then you're on the boat, you can see all the stones and things on. Under the lake.
Yeah, you can see really
under
far
the water.
Down.
Yeah, and then it shows everything. And even winter, our lake gets frozen like a glass. And you can see under the ice what is there.
Wow.
So it's amazing, huh?
Do people drive on the lake in the winter?
Yeah, we drive. Huh. We ski. We walk. Yeah. We just like, even it's easy for us to cross the Russian border for winter time. We just like a 2 hours drive on the lake and then cross the border. Go to Irkutsk, do some shopping, and then back in the
Oh, wow,
evening.
Really?
So it's amazing, you know?
Huh. And that's legal for you to do, too?
Yeah.
Mongolians can go to Russia very easily?
Yeah, we don't need visa.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Huh. So nice. Easy.
Yeah, it's great. And Lake Baikal is right there. Maybe this lake doesn't look as big because of that, but it's huge. It's right next to the biggest lake in the world, but it's still quite large.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, well,
I can explain like this way. Is that too long if I talk about it?
Go ahead, please.
Okay, I can explain like this.
Okay.
You are the other side of the world. You arrived here, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, now
we're
you can
see.
We're
looking at a map of Mongolia.
Yeah.
Yep.
And now you can see Lake Hovsgol here and Lake Baikal here. And there is another water going that way. You see it?
Yes, there's a river that.
Yeah, and then Lake Baikal get more than 50%, like 57% of the water from Mongolia. But the water from the, like some rivers give a water to the Lake Hovsgol, and then only one river get out, and then that river goes, joined with that river, and then go up to the Baikal.
So it starts here and it goes.
Starts from here, kind of.
Goes up to Baikal.
And then that river here, it's connected with this lake.
Yep.
And then that river go out to Kizil, It's a capital of Tuva country.
Yeah.
And then the name is... and then the Lake Baikal go out like that in Angarsky River. And then that river go out in this way. Yeah. And then that two water go to the Arctic Ocean.
Oh, yeah.
See? So
all the way
we are really... beginning of the, how can I say it? Like spring water of the world fresh water.
So this is the
kind
beginning of it
beginning
all.
Of this, the all.
Uh-huh.
So it's very important lake
For sure. This water then goes all the way to Lake Baikal and then the ocean.
Yeah, exactly. You see?
Right, yeah.
That's why I say that at the ASEAN meeting in Mongolia, we organized the ASEAN Asian Socialist Country meeting, like kind of ASEAN big meeting at the government house. It organized by Mongolians, and then for whole last summer had the meeting different things about Mongolia, about the other countries, about our other Asian countries, like these things we were talk. And on that meeting, I went from here.
Yeah.
And then everybody was talking about Mongolian mining, wrong contract, blah, blah, blah. Hmm. And I said, at least nobody gonna eat gold, you know, on the world. And the most important thing is the water. And then we have a river in front of UB. And then people start talking about that river getting problem, wrong mining is destroying that river, and so many fishes are dying in that river. People were talking like that more than 10 years ago, and nobody does nothing, and now it's too late.
Oh, really?
So now the river is not beautiful as I know when I in my childhood, you know? Mm-hmm. So I just say that before too late, please do something on that lake because of that unorganized tourism, the summertime, of not good qualified boats on the lake, and because of fuels and gases into the water and too much camping around the lake, and people have no proper toilet and garbage bin and everything. So we stay every year, every summer finished, we stay here with lots of garbage and things, you know. That works very bad to this lake.
Yeah.
Is that river, it's going to happen in 10 years, maybe we're going to be too late. So please, you know, get more attention to our lake, like that words I said in that meeting. So you can understand like that way too. So it's a very special lake.
Definitely, definitely. And I'll do what I can to spread the word of not polluting. And this is a special lake. I think, and I think you've got it so right. You can't eat money. You can't eat gold.
Yeah.
Or you you'll die.
Good with the nature, and then
it
will stay for us, for our kids forever.
And hopefully if more tourists come, then that will bring more money. Like, money can be good. It'll bring more money in, and then that will...
Just for today, it's good.
But hopefully it will motivate people to not do things like mining, destroying the rivers. Because once you destroy the river, the tourists aren't going to come look at it.
Yep, exactly. You know?
Well, I hope that all works out.
I hope so, too.
For now, it all is still clean, though, huh?
Yeah, now it's clean. We did lots of cleaning around the lake.
Let's keep it that way.
Yeah.
Huh. All right, and before we wrap this up, what's the name of your guest house again?
Mongol Uching.
What is Mongol Uching?
Yeah, Mongol Uching.
Uching. And what does Uching mean?
Oh, it's just like ancient Mongolian word about the woman.
Oh, and your logo is like a woman.
Like a woman head, yeah?
Yeah.
Because in my wish, when I was a guide, I always had a dream to have my own small, warm guest house one day.
Mm-hmm. And now then, you're living it.
Now I'm on the way doing that. Uh-huh. And, you know, people need a host. I know so many backpackers, so many guests traveling around Mongolia. It's a huge country, difficult transport. So people get tired a lot, you know, and they need a warm host, warm stay. They need the proper food and internet, whatever.
A clean and shower, internet, that's for
a
sure
good
important.
Hot shower.
Yeah, hot shower.
And, yeah, people need it. Uh-huh. And sometimes for the service and then, how can I say? When I was a guide, many camps, of course, I stay with my guests and I think like, if I have my own place one day, I'm not going to do like that. Or I will do like this.
Uh-huh.
Like these ideas I had many times. So I'm well now in that way, which is the best way to give them a good service, give them a good warm host. You know, I'm not concentrate for the numbers of the guests. I concentrate for the quality of my service and my guests and things, you know. And Uching means like a woman, something like a high woman. It's not a queen or princess, but it's like a woman, okay?
Yeah.
So, of course, mother, is the most important person in the family, yeah?
Sure.
Make your home warm, good meals, and clean. That's the way, like, it's a kind of Mongolian mom's place. I'm a mother of the three kids. So I just wanted, like, Mongolian mom's warm.
It has that feel to it, and you're doing a great job of it.
That's a meaning. Because everybody gives the name like a wolves and Genghis Khan's and mountains and something very strong like this name they give it to the camps.
Yeah.
So now it's just like Mongolian mom's place.
It's a good idea. I mean, I wonder how many Genghis Khan hotels and hostels there are in Mongolia. Probably thousands. And do you have a website right now?
No. Actually, the website wasn't very professional. We just made it for the tourism contract when we were opening it, and now I'm just working on the way for a new one.
Okay.
For a good one. But we have a Facebook page.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Do you know it? Can you say it? Or
of course, just put my camp name. That's it, Mongol Luchin Camp, on a Facebook page.
Oh, okay.
And you can see all the information and
photos
and everything.
I'll put up a picture for you.
Yeah.
And maybe we can take a look at the website thing. Maybe I can give you some ideas because I've done some web development myself.
Yeah, so. Would be great.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's take a look at that.
Yeah. And then we are on the TripAdvisor and Airbnb.
Okay. Cool. So, Airbnb too.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, I can put up links to all those for you.
That's nice.
Because this is a really a special place. There's every now and then I get to a hostel where I go, yeah, this place has it. They know what they're doing, and this is one of them.
Thank you. Thank you to say that.
I've been happy to stay here for so long.
That's the main thing, to give a power to the people, I think, to do something. Mm-hmm. Like, we were like brand new place here for all those last years, and then you were like doing your best. It's still so, it was a little bit hard time, but this summer we have a lot of guests and everybody stay here so happy and no any complaint at all. Everybody just, we will miss your place. We had a nice time. Thank you, Dava, your food is nice. And that gave me more power. And I sleep like 4 or 5 hours every night. Feel some tired, but when my guests are happy, that's a most important thing than money for me, you know? Like.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for providing that. That's just fantastic. All right, and thanks for coming on the show once again.
Ha, you're welcome.
Where we last left off in our Russia story, we're heading into a new country of Mongolia. And on the train out of Russia, the window came down. This is only the second time I've been on a train where the windows were able to roll down enough to stick your hand outside or maybe even your head outside. The first time was in Vietnam when there was if I remember right, there was a bit of a fire on the train and inside the train, and the conductor had to roll down the window. They were normally locked and he had a special key. And as soon as the window came down, Katie and I just couldn't resist. We stuck our heads straight out, felt that warm breeze against our faces. It was awesome. There's nothing like sticking your head out of a train when it's moving. Maybe a little dangerous, but whatever. So this train had a window that just came down without a key or anything. And as soon as we passed any sort of interesting scenery, everyone's hands started going out with their phone in their hand or a camera, and they were taking pictures of the scenery without the hindrance of a window in the way. Well, as soon as we were done taking pictures, I, of course, couldn't resist the temptation once again, and I stuck my head outside. But as soon as I did that, all of a sudden there was a fire. Once again, there was a fire on the train, but this time it was outside, and it was coming from the front of the train, and this thick black cloud of smoke just came right at me, right in my face. I was, I was just coughing really bad. I brought my head in. I went, oh man, maybe that wasn't such a good idea. And I sat down, and it was at that point that my nose started running. And I started getting a sore throat. And as the night went on and on, I felt myself getting sicker and sicker. Of course, I'm not sure if it was the smoke that did it, but it sure did seem like that was the starting point. And by the morning, I could no longer even breathe through my nose. I couldn't take a full breath either. I was just coughing every time I tried to breathe. I felt awful. I was really low on energy. Had a hard time walking with my backpack. I was full on sick. Now, Katie and I were going to take a rest day anyway once we got to Mongolia because we had been rushing pretty fast through Russia. Pardon the pun. We only had 30 days there on our visa, and it's a big country to get through. We were doing a lot of camping, and anytime you go camping, there's a lot of preparation involved with buying food and stuff. And then once you get back from camping, you have to make sure all your gear is good to go for the next time. So we just really needed to slow down and take a day off. It felt great to not be on a schedule now that we were in Mongolia. We no longer had any trains to catch, tickets that we had purchased beforehand. But because I was so sick, we had really no choice. So we hunkered down and in this hostel, stayed there actually for a second day as well, simply because I was sick. And we had to figure out where to go in Mongolia first. This country is an outdoorsman's paradise. I mean, there's mountains in the southwest. There's the Gobi Desert in the south. It's this huge desert. Center of the country has some great national parks. And up north, there's a lake called Kuvskul. And this lake holds 1% of the world's fresh water. It's a really big lake. It doesn't look all that big because it's really close to Lake Baikal. And Lake Baikal is just absolutely massive. But it's still a huge lake and big wilderness area. And the thing is, it was the end of September, and we were getting to that point where summer was over and fall wouldn't last for too long. So we wanted to get up to this colder part of Mongolia before it got just simply too cold to stay there anymore. So that's where we decided to go first. So on our third day in the country, we decided to take a bus. And one interesting thing that we learned right away was that any car in Mongolia can be a taxi. So we just walked outside and stuck out our arms, and the first car that came up to us stopped. And it was this young guy with a Fu Manchu style facial hair. And we showed him where we were going to go. We had it written out in Mongolian for him. And he said, yeah, go, come on, get in. This guy was really, really happy-go-lucky. At one point, he said, like, I am a taxi driver. He hardly knew any English. He's like, I'm a taxi driver. Like, not really. He just had a car. But then he put on the radio or on his CD. And the first song that came on was Unbreak My Heart. And I think he actually thought it was a love song, and he wasn't aware that this was actually quite a sad song. And I think if we had broken it to him that this was sad, then his heart would have gotten broken, and the whole world would have collapsed in a pool of irony. So we just left it alone and let him think that this was a happy love song. Anyway, he dropped us off at the bus station or bus area. We jumped on this bus and took off, and traffic was horrendous in the city. Ulaanbaatar has about 1.5 million people, and all of Mongolia has 3 million people, so roughly speaking. So half of Mongolians live in the capital, and the other half is this giant country, this vast land with really barely anybody. But Ulaanbaatar felt quite urban, congested, polluted. We were happy to get away. And the road out of town was a two-lane highway, paved, luckily. Most of the roads in Mongolia are not paved, but the pavement was really shitty. You couldn't go very fast. It was a very bumpy ride. And I was still sick, very, very sick. I had a hard time even staying awake. And when I was awake, I was listening to the loud, sappy music that the bus driver, of course, insisted on playing. It was pretty miserable for me. But the thing is, the scenery was spectacular. Now, one difference between Russia and Mongolia for me so far, Russia looked totally different than what I had predicted. I had an idea of what Russia was going to be in my mind. And then once Katie and I got there, we were like, whoa, this is nothing at all like we thought it would be. in a really positive way. Mongolia, on the other hand, is pretty, once we got out of Ulaanbaatar, is pretty much exactly how I thought it was going to be. I mean, you've got this Asian steppe, this vast grassland, really, really wide sweeping land and rolling hills of grasses and some forests where the trees are almost glowing yellow at this point. It's so bright because of the autumn. And nomadic people living in yurts, or gers as they call them. And you'd see just a sprinkling of gers here and there. You'd see guys on horseback or sometimes on motorcycle rounding up their animals. Tons of grazing cattle and yaks and goats, sheep, some pigs here and there, a lot of horses. So vast, wild land, spectacular scenery all day. If only I could have enjoyed it, but I couldn't because I was too sick. Anyway, our bus that day went to a town called Mohon, I think they pronounce it, but it's spelled M-O-R-O-N, so Moron. Moron or Mohon is the biggest city in the region. It has something like 30,000 people. And you go several hundred miles from there and there's not a bigger city. So that's the kind of, that's how far out there you are when you travel around Mongolia. We stayed in a ger camp, so Katie and I got to sleep inside of one of these nomadic gers that you can take down. They're tents. You can take it down, put it up quickly. And I think Katie went to make a cup of tea or something. The bus ride took like 14 hours, so we were drained. It was nighttime. Katie went to make a tea. I went to use the bathroom. There were no toilets. It was just an outhouse. And maybe it was just because I was sick, but this outhouse smelled worse than any outhouse I've ever been in. I mean, I made the mistake of looking down, and it was just this pool of brown liquid. So incredibly nasty. And I had to finish peeing really quick and run outside and try to get some fresh air because I felt vomit coming up. And my mouth was just salivating, and I was just trying to hold it back. And I just couldn't hold it down anymore, and I just vomited all over their lawn. I picked a somewhat secluded area. I was debating whether or not to run back into the outhouse to vomit into the actual outhouse, but that would have just made me vomit because of the smell. And I guess now that I think about it, I would have vomited either way, so I probably should have just done that. At any rate, I went into the ger and just passed out after a horrible day, even though the scenery was so spectacular. Luckily, I was able to sleep all through the night, 9 hours straight, slept like a rock, and I got up and I actually felt better. So now we wanted to get away from even this small city, and so Katie and I took a taxi a couple hours further north to this small town called Khatgal or Khatgal. And this town maybe might have a couple thousand people in it. It's at the south shore of this giant lake. And we had to figure out, what do we do here? Well, the big thing in Mongolia is riding on horses. People have been riding on horseback in Mongolia for thousands of years. It's really what you do. I'm not really into riding on horses. I've done it a couple of times, like in the Wisconsin Dells where I'm from, like a touristy thing for an hour, just walking really slow. Katie especially wanted to try it. But then we stayed in this guest house, and the owner, a couple owns the place, and the man was there. His wife was out with some tourists for a few days, and he didn't speak too much English, but we communicated back and forth, and he actually came up with a really good idea for us. We could rent horses and ride 3 days north along, but inland, not along the shore, through the mountains next to the lake with a guide, and then the guide would leave us after 3 days, and then we'd walk back along the lake shore, so no big hills or anything, all the way back to the guest house for three more days. So that's what we decided to do. Once I was well enough to actually do this, we got up on our first day of our hike, And we met our guide, and he was this tiny little man. He probably was like 5 feet tall, local guy. He didn't speak any English. He was wearing the traditional Mongolian clothing, and you could just tell right away, this was his backyard, and he knew this place like the back of his hand. He loaded up the horses for us. We headed through the forest, out of the town, again, through the forest was just bright yellow at this point. This is late September, so I feel a really good time to come, actually. Summer is the really busy season for tourism. It's a little colder at this time of year, but not many people, and the trees are just fantastic. We rode out of the town up into the hills and ended up stopping at this remote ger, just one single yurt that a family was living in. And we found out that most of the families who live near there they've already begun to move on for the winter. They move several times a year, as you're going to learn in the main part of this podcast. But this family was still there, and Katie got out a bag of carrots for a snack for us. And she took one and ate it, and I took one and ate it. And then we offered one to our guide, and he reluctantly took it and ate it. And we gave a little piece to the other people there. And one guy took a piece of carrot and motioned to us, like, hey, is it okay if we give the carrot to my horse? And we're like, yeah, sure, whatever. So he gave the carrot to the horse. And then Katie and I realized, well, we have plenty of food. We don't need the rest of these carrots. So we decided to give the rest of the carrots away to the people who were there. And the guy gave all of the carrots to his horse. So I think, just from what I can gather, that the people were a little bit reluctant to eat carrots, but the horses love them. And this wasn't even one of the horses we were going to take. So this was a very well-fed horse. Anyway, then we took off from this ger and on horseback and continued trotting through these fields. Now, the horses themselves, the first thing I noticed is they seemed just really healthy. Like, I've been to India, I've been to Mexico, I've been to a few countries where I've seen horses that just look like death. They look like they're starving. You can see their ribs and everything. These horses were much bigger and healthier, but they weren't like giant fat horses like you'd see at home, like the ones that I rode in the Dells. And the next thing I noticed was, back when I did ride that horse just for an hour or whatever, the touristy thing, it was pooping just nonstop. And these horses only pooped like once in the morning, which I guess, I know it's a little bit vulgar or whatever, but I found it quite interesting that the horses here, all they eat other than carrots here and there, is the grass. They're just eating the grass that they're walking on. And it just seems like maybe that's the right diet. Maybe it's really healthy for them to eat this. Now, the horses that we were on did fart, like, constantly, but they never pooped. So, whatever, take it for what it's worth. Then as we went along, every time we stopped for a small break, or even if I just had to slow down after catching up with the other people, my horse especially just wanted to eat every time. He just always wanted to graze on the grass. And I thought about it, and the horses are always looking down at their food as they're walking over it. So imagine if you're walking along the landscape and beneath your feet is nothing but hamburgers. You would just be so hungry. You just nonstop want to stop and eat hamburgers constantly. So our horses were just like, walk, walk, walk. Oh, hamburgers. Walk, walk, walk. Hamburgers. Oh, walk, walk, walk. Maybe a bush would come up and like, oh, big juicy steak. And then we'd walk a little bit further and get to a muddy river and, oh, Coca-Cola. And they'd want to go down and drink. We continued going all afternoon through the forest. There were mountains in the background. Just really spectacular. We only saw one family all day. They were on a motorcycle and they passed us. Otherwise, we just had the whole place to ourselves. Our knees got pretty sore though, Katie and my knees. And we were happy to get off the horses at the end of the day. We stopped in this valley, which was next to a dry riverbed. And that's where we were gonna camp for the night. So Katie and I set up our tent our guide had borrowed a tent, and he set up his tent. And then it was time to cook dinner. So we went down to the riverbed. Our guide had these saddlebags that were made from leather and hand-stitched together. And these things belonged in a museum. I mean, they're probably decades old, but still in great shape. And our guide opened up this leather saddlebag, pulled out an axe that had a leather sheath on it. And he started chopping up firewood and kindling and made up a little fire in the riverbed. And then he pulled out a leather pouch, and there was salt in it. And he pulled out another leather pouch, and there was sugar in it. And he pulled out another leather pouch, and there was dried meat in it. And another one had tea in it. He had all these pouches. And then he had this really old pot that was blackened and like lumpy from being used so much, and it had a black lumpy lid to it. And then he had a grips thing to grip the lid and remove it so he wouldn't burn his hand. That was made out of a horn. I think it was a cow's horn with a notch cut in it. So he had no plastic on him. He had nothing that wouldn't biodegrade. That no trash. I mean, it was amazing. He had almost nothing from the modern world at all, and yet he was so efficient with it. Katie and I had a stove that was brand new and pots that are pretty new, and we started cooking dinner on our stove as our guide started cooking dinner on the campfire. And it was like watching Rocky IV, where Rocky was training in the forest and using nature, and then the Russian guy was training in the lab and using modern technology. And you can guess who won this battle, because by the time our water was boiling on the stove, our guide had already boiled his water, cooked his whole meal, eaten, cleaned up, washed his pots, and then gathered even more firewood and added them to the fire for an actual campfire so we could stay warm. And our water wasn't even boiling yet. I felt bad about this, I guess, like inferior maybe, but I was just so extremely impressed and just loved watching our guide mess around with all this gear that he had. It was so cool. Anyway, so we sat around the fire for a little bit and it stayed warm, but then as night fell, it got quite cold. We felt a little bad because Katie and I had borrowed these cold weather sleeping bags from the guest house, but our guide, all he had to sleep to cover himself was the horse blankets. But I mean, I asked him, are you gonna be okay? He insisted he was totally fine. Like, no, I'll be fine. Okay. So we went to bed. I guess now that I think about it, the horses were just naked and they were probably fine, but of course they have horse hair. We went to bed probably 8:30 or 9, shortly after it got dark. Next morning, day two, we got up and there was snow, probably about 2 inches of snow covering our tent. And I stepped outside and it was this winter wonderland. The snow was everywhere. And this was September 24th, first snowfall of the year. I think I've seen snow in September at home like once in my whole life. So this was quite special to see it in Mongolia this time. And the snow had combined with the yellow trees to create this creamy type coloring, which was amazing to watch the sun come up over this valley behind the mountains. It was just awesome. We cooked breakfast, and luckily the snow stopped falling, but it was still very, very cold, well below freezing when we took off. And the day was characterized by a lot of wind, a lot of snow, but then some sunshine in between too. So it'd be sunny for a bit, then the snow would come, then it'd be sunny. Luckily, it never got warm enough that it turned into rain, because cold rain is the worst. Snow we can deal with. And as far as the landscape, again, just beautiful hiking through these mountains. Now the mountains were snow-capped, and the trees were still bright yellow. There was the white of the snow. We walked through many rivers. It was just awesome. Up and down these hills, we crossed several passes. And toward the end of the day, we reached this really high point overlooking the lake. And so this was our first look at the actual lake well below us. And it was so windy. I think the horses were almost in danger of blowing over. It was quite treacherous. So we actually had to get down from our horses and walk with them down the other side of this pass until we got out of the wind a little bit. And then we got up on the horses again and trotted down the hill, down, 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 down. And at the end of the day, we saw our first other person all day. It was this guy on a horse who was herding his yaks. So we waved hi to him, and then we stopped near there. We were pretty close to the lake at this point, and we set up camp. Once again, it was really cold and windy. This time, our guide didn't even feel comfortable making a fire because it was so windy. So we loaned him our stove to cook. So I guess, in this case, I guess the Russian does win out if we're using the Rocky IV analogy. But we ended up cooking dinner inside of the vestibule of our tent on our stove. And just because it was so cold and windy, we got to bed pretty early. Now, the next morning, we got up and tragedy had struck. There was about a 12-inch rip in the fly of our tent. And a stick had somehow broken off of a tree and penetrated the fly. And I was like, oh, damn it. So I got up, went outside. I thought, man, maybe we set up camp in a really bad spot. But no, there were no trees or branches from trees within 20 feet of our tent. So this stick must have flown a really long distance. And I think it was just bad luck. Anyway, I couldn't feel too bad, though, because, you know, we had all this warm gear. We were quite warm. And our guide, well, he was a trooper. I mean, real tough guy. But you could tell it was a very cold night for him. And the other thing is one of the horses had escaped, which is almost even more tragic. But luckily, it only ran away to meet up with some other horses that were grazing behind the hills near us. And so our guide went out and got it. It had a long rope attached to it still, so he only had to get within 20 feet of it. The pack horse that we had that was carrying our gear, this was a feisty horse, and he did not like walking. And our guide had to hold on to this rope just with his hand. And several times the horse broke away from our guide, but he wasn't a very smart horse because all he saw was the hamburgers. And as soon as he broke away, he was just like, hamburgers, hamburgers. And he just went down and started eating. And he could have run, galloped away with all of our stuff on his back, and he would have been free, but no deal. We always were able to catch him again pretty easily. Anyway, we took down camp. We took off. Down to the lake. We were at the lake within an hour. And then we thought our guide was just going to leave at this point. But we were confused because our guide turned to the north, which is walking away from the guest house that we were supposed to walk to. And we stopped him. We were like, well, what's going on? And it's something that happens a lot when you're traveling. You just, things are out of your control. You don't know what's going on. You can't speak the language. So we just decided he probably had a good plan, and we went with him, hiking or trotting up north along the lake. We stopped once at a cabin, which I guess our guide knew the guys who lived there because they just talked for like 20 minutes. We didn't understand a word of what they were saying, but then they offered us some yak milk tea, which is delicious. And the people around this area in Mongolia are really generous. They'll just let you right in their home and give you stuff. We didn't want to take too much because we know they don't have much to begin with. But it sure felt good to be inside of a warm cabin because, once again, it was a really cold day. So after we left the cabin, we continued going north more and more. And at the end of the day, we reached this remote abandoned cabin that was offset from the lake. It looked a bit like the kind of place zombies might attack in the middle of the night, so I was a bit worried about that. But now I understood why our guide had taken us so far north, because now he could sleep in a cabin and it had a fireplace in it. So he gathered firewood, got the fire going. It was nice and toasty warm inside, and all was good. We were able to cook on the wood stove. we Katie and I set up our tent next to the cabin. We actually ended up patching the fly. We were thinking, well, what can we use to patch it? We ended up using Katie's moleskin, which is for her blisters on her feet, but I think it worked pretty well. It held up, well, so far so good anyway. Well, we had a great night of staying warm in this cabin. Once it got dark, we were about to go to bed, and we saw these two blinking red lights far away, like 500 meters away, moving just real slow. And Katie and I just figured, oh, it's some herder. He's bringing in his animals for the night. And the lights then started moving toward us, closer and closer. And Katie opened the door to the tent. It was totally pitch black out by this point. And she shined her head torch, her flashlight, or at the lights. And our guide freaked out. He was like, no, get back in the cabin. Get back. No. We're like, whoa, no, what? Oh, we're not supposed to be here. We're trespassing or something, and our guide's going to get in trouble now. This is not good. So our guide stayed outside for a couple minutes, and then something was weird, though. We poked our heads out, and we're like, wait a minute. There aren't any people out there. There's only horses, and these lights are actually attached to the horses. And then I went, oh, I get it. The herder attached lights to the horses so that he could find them easier at night. Oh, that makes sense. And our guide didn't want Katie shining a light at it, probably just so the horses would not be attracted to us, and instead they'd go back to their home the way they were supposed to go. It's just another funny thing that happens sometimes when you don't share a common language with someone else. You're thinking completely different things. Who knows? Maybe we still got it wrong. Maybe there was still something else we didn't understand. Anyway, that was our third day and final day of horse riding. Katie and I were both really sore. Our knees were sore from riding these horses, being stationary in the saddle, in the stirrups for so long. We were starting to walk bow-legged. I started to understand why cowboys walk bow-legged. I don't think I'd want to do this for 2 weeks straight or anything. 3 days was plenty for me. So the next morning we got up and our guide rounded up his horses. He tied them all together, put up all of his gear, and then he took off. He rode off into the sunrise with his four horses, and Katie and I were on our own for the first time on this trip. And we had quite a long distance to walk back, but we had 3 days worth of food still, and we were in really good spirits. The road at first that we were walking down next to the lake, it, for cars anyway, it sucked. It was fine for hiking on, but it would have been a rough drive. You would need a pretty heavy-duty vehicle to get through it. But by noon, we reached the point where we had joined that road with the horses the previous day. And from here on, the road was actually in really good shape. And we started seeing these resorts along the lake, one after another after another. And these were pretty much all closed off for the season, so there weren't really many people. But the scenery wasn't quite as good in the afternoon just because there were so many resorts to walk past, and we were just walking along a road. So it was just basically a long day of walking. We ended up going about 25 kilometers that day, and we just found we made up our own campsite in the forest between two of the resorts. Went to bed early, got up the next day, and now we realize, well, we could probably reach our guest house on day five instead of day six. I think it was about 50 or so kilometers from that cabin, which is definitely doable in 2 days if you walk fast enough. So the next day, actually we had a pretty good section of hiking that day through the forest when the road split off from the lake. But much of the day, once again, was walking past resorts. So it wasn't quite as interesting. The really interesting parts were the first couple days on horseback, where we were all alone in the wilderness, in the mountains. And at the end of day five, we made it back to our guest house. We were really happy to be back in a warm place where we could hang out with some other people and not just talk to each other. And that's where I met Dava. She was back. And that's where I'm going to leave you right now. We spent a couple days there, ended up taking the bus back to Ulaanbaatar, and now we're making up plans for the next week or so. I think we'll We'll be in Mongolia for another week or so, and then we'll head into China. So that's all for now. Thank you very much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this, and I'll catch you next time.